You're tuned in to Nerd Overload, your weekly show for video games, movies, TV shows, comics, tech news, and more. Now your hosts, Cody Pinnick, Samantha Cross, Sam Dunham, and Josh Harrison.
Okay, so here's the intro concept. It's the theme song to TV's Dinosaurs, which starts out like all Godzilla-y, and then Earl Sinclair shows up, and he's like, honey, I'm home. But Josh could go, Nerd Overload, I'm home, since he's back from Origins. And then we play the rest of the wacky Dinosaurs theme song from there.
Okay, yeah, oh, sure. Okay, I like that idea. I like where you're getting with this. One question. Who, outside of the people in this room, would remember the theme song to Dinosaurs and this, the year of our Lord 2019?
Good point.
It's Nerd Overload. Hey, I'm Sam.
I'm Josh.
And I'm Cody.
We have a great show for you this week.
Boom, 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 boom. It always in my head turns into the athletic theme from Yoshi's Island.
The first thing I think of when I think of dinosaurs is always...
Not the mama.
No. This is not from the show, but I think of Walk the Dinosaur.
Oh, yeah.
Song. Because, but that's not from that.
Didn't they play that in Theodore Rex?
They played it in the Super Mario Brothers movie.
I think they played it in Theodore Rex too.
It's got to be in Theodore Rex.
You talk about movies like things that no one remembers. Theodore Rex.
I can't not remember Theodore Rex.
With Whoopi Goldberg.
No matter how hard I try.
We're back. A Dinosaur Story.
Yeah, Josh is back. We have a great show. We're going to talk about some news and stuff. But first, let's do some things we've been checking out. Josh, you have a lot of things to check out.
You were on assignment.
Oh, no. I wasn't really on assignment.
You're
per
on
se.
The spot.
I went to the Origins Game Fair in Columbus, which is the annual board gaming. I mean, it's kind of grown a bit beyond that now, but for the most part, still hobby gaming convention. It's probably one of the bigger ones out there.
Yeah.
Next to like Gen Con, which is in August.
That's the other big one. Yeah.
And I tell you,
not in Ohio.
Yes, in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. Still sort of close, though.
Yeah.
It's drivable.
It's doable.
Yeah, definitely.
But
doable.
It kind of like makes you realize how big like the board gaming tabletop hobby has grown. Because this year was huge. Like, they had all three of the giant event halls.
Really?
At the convention.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, like...
Not even Wizard World can do that.
No, Wizard World just does the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never been to a con that was more than one hall.
Yeah, it was three halls, and they opened up all the side doors, so the three rooms were connected.
Wow.
But
that's impressive.
The way the setup was, it was kind of ingenious on how they did it. So you come down the stairs to the escalator to the main event, or the main lobby of the convention center, whatever you want to call it, the causeway. And the first door you come to is the first game hall, they wanted to call it, I think. So it was just a bunch of like tables set up and people just playing different gaming events, depending on the company. Like the WizKids tournaments for like HeroClix and Dice Masters and Attack Wing and all that stuff. Those events were going on. The next hall was the exhibition hall. So all the vendors and people showing different things, like, and where you could actually purchase things.
And they were all nude.
No.
Oh, wait,
that's the exhibitionist hall.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it could have worked for the weekend. and then the next hall was another gaming hall.
Wow.
But yeah, and then, of course, it's Origins. So there's stuff going on all over the convention center. Like,
sure.
There was a room. There was like a side area for just like Steve Jackson games. So like the Munchkin and all that stuff.
No Mead Hall, though, unfortunately.
Right?
Sorry, I'm very punchy today, apparently.
There's enough Viking games out there. There could have been a Mead Hall somewhere. And then like upstairs, the upstairs areas was like, you know, all the, like the Pathfinder, Dungeons & Dragons, whatnot, that they always have going on. Shadowrun had a big showing this year.
Huh. Oh, cool.
I'm riding on the coattails of cyberpunk pseudo-fantasy stuff.
Sure.
I think a new edition of Shadowrun actually came out at Origins. Like, it premiered at Origins.
I didn't know they were still doing Shadowrun.
Yeah, it's like I think a different company has picked up the license for it.
Interesting.
Kind of like Vampire.
Yeah, a new Vampire just came out, too.
Yeah, I'd love to play that, but nobody would ever play Vampire with me. It's a hard sell.
In my personal experience, people I've run into that get really into Vampire, I don't want to play with them. So
I would only play Vampire in a sense where I could play as
someone from What We Do in the Shadows.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, right? Just the worst vampire.
Maybe we should play vampire.
Let's see here. What else?
What We Do in the Masquerade.
I love it. Nice. I love it.
Perfect.
That's a podcast name right there.
Yep. Yep. Nailed it. Nailed it.
Trademark. Do not steal.
Yeah. TM.
Man, there was so much going on.
Okay. Well, let me focus this a little.
Yes.
How did your amp guard go?
Man, we were busy.
Yeah?
We were busy. We were busy on Wednesday, the first day, and we're generally never that busy.
Okay.
But we had people like about, I want to say, either right before lunch or after the lunchtime general rush, we get slammed. And there's like, and we had like so many people like.
Everybody's full of Subway and ready to smack each other with swords.
I mean, yeah.
Subway and bad sushi?
Yeah.
I didn't have the sushi, but I did have some Subway.
For the best. 1 year at a con there, I had the sushi.
Oof.
I've made better decisions in my life. Let me put it that way.
I went to that Barley's tavern across the street from the convention center.
Oh, yeah. Is it good?
Yeah, it's not bad.
Oh, right on.
I mean, one, they had a coupon in the book to get a pint glass with like the Origins logo and stuff on it.
Oh, that's
for
cool.
Free.
Excellent. Okay.
So I got that. I couldn't go into the Brewcadia Barcade because it was being held for a private event.
Oh.
I was like, oh,
there's a new Barcade over there?
Yeah, it was there last year.
Huh.
Yeah, it's in the same complex. There's also a Mikey's Late Night Slice like right there too.
Nice.
Excellent.
Last year they was their first open and it was so busy. Anyway, that's food. But they did have this cocktail drink for Origins called the Ecto Cooler.
Oh, perfect.
It was pretty good. It could have probably stood to have more Midori in it. It was kind of a light green. Anyway, we were busy. A lot of our crafting classes were sold out. So like the bow making class and the, you know, leather working, chainmail, a lot of stuff. And then we had people fighting constantly on our battleground area.
Excellent.
But yeah. We were so busy. It was a good time though.
Cool.
Lots of people. And then our nighttime RP tavern we've started last year.
Okay.
Was just gangbusters. Like at one point we had more con goers in the room than we had like the amp guard volunteers.
What is the RP tavern?
Yeah.
It's just kind of this thing where a lot of people will assume characters, like as far as us volunteers go, and we can do certain class abilities and things, and there's like, you know, just kind of schleb it up and like RP a little bit and then play bar games.
Oh, cool.
Like we were playing cards and played a lot of Shut the Box. You ever play Shut the Box?
No.
It's this dice rolling game where you have like this wooden box that has numbers on it. And when you roll the dice, whatever you got on the dice, either a combination or basically the sum has to be, and you can shut the different numbered tabs. And the goal of the game is to shut all the numbered tabs to win. And we were like betting fake gold coins and stuff like for that.
So it's like improv Ren Fair with games.
And kinda.
That sounds cool.
Yeah. And we have like mixed drinks that are non-alcoholic. And we had a few different flavors this year.
Right on.
I designed a label for one of them.
Nice.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was a good time. Then there's like these bardic musician guys that were playing farther up the convention came to visit us and stuff.
Cool.
And they did like a little impromptu concert.
Excellent. Jamming out on their lute.
Yeah.
I was making a joke, but that's awesome.
It might have been a guitar now that I'm thinking about it.
Mandolin.
Yeah. But it was like, it was the convention center as a whole was busy. And like registration was all the way at the, like normally it's kind of in the middle. It was all the way at the end by the Good L entrance.
Really?
Like as far as you could get.
Dang.
So I had to walk like from one end of the building to the other.
Wow, that is wild.
It was, but the way they set it up, it ran very smoothly.
Con that big, they would have to.
This was the first year I ever did the pre-reg like kiosk thing.
Mm-hmm.
So normally someone just generally gets my badge and brings it to me, but I went myself, and it was just fast. It was great.
Yeah, don't you get like an exhibitor type thing? Right?
Yeah,
yeah.
I didn't realize this, but game masters or whatever we're called get access to the dealer's hall before the general public.
Nice.
Really?
Yeah. We were walking around when it was like Saturday morning and we went in there. It was before 10 and we're just walking around. Me and my buddy Rick were just buying stuff and whatnot. And we're just killing. And all of a sudden there's this announcement in 10 minutes, the exhibitor hall will open up for the general public. And we're like, oh, and as I turn, we're walking past one of the doors to the outside of the room and they're just It's like Black Friday crowd of people.
Oh, wow.
Waiting to come in. And I'm like, oh.
Whoa.
I wonder why it wasn't so busy in here. But it was a good time. There was lots of stuff. There were a lot of games I wanted to play that I didn't really get a chance to play.
Okay.
Like, I wanted to play Fireball Island because that looks a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. I followed the Kickstarter on that.
Yeah,
that
and like there's like a bunch of expansions and stuff out for it now.
I wish I would have Kickstarted it because it is expensive to buy on
it
its own.
It is, yes. Did you know that it came with a single campaign D&D 5th edition, the Kickstarter version did?
No.
I did not know that.
Set in the Fireball
Island area?
Island's like universe.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's neat.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
It was like the Kickstarter was like a reasonable like $60.
It was like $60, but now it's like crazy.
Yeah. It's like $90 or $100 or something.
I didn't really get to see the price, but the demo was busy all the time. Oh, like, I really wanted to play it. There was a King of Tokyo tournament going on, and I really wanted to play that because I love that game.
Mm-hmm.
I love King of Tokyo. Plus, there was the giant version of King of Tokyo where you had, like, cardboard standees of the monsters that were, like,
oh, like excellent.
4 or 5 feet tall.
Excellent, excellent.
With, like, big dice to roll. Let's see. What other goofy stuff did I see?
The Cones of Dunshire.
I wish. I wish. I've seen other people try to make a game like that, and apparently none of the versions work right. But that was kind of the joke in the show.
Yeah.
I do have a Cones of Dunshire t-shirt. I should have wore it.
So, okay, what were some of the games that you did demo?
I played this one game called Proving Ground, and it was hard.
Okay.
And I was bad, and I lost. I was bad at it.
You did not prove yourself.
I did not. But apparently, it's a single player game where you play against the game itself.
Mm-hmm.
And you are the story, I guess, is you're some heiress to the throne or something, but then, like, political Game of Thronesian powers kind of make it to where, like, you're labeled as a traitor or something and thrown into, like, a gladiator arena.
Okay.
So your goal is you have to defeat 6 opponents in this arena or whatever. And so you got your card with the middle, and then you got like your opponent cards around, and you have to roll dice. You have a minute, and there's like a counter and stuff. You have a minute to roll these dice and stuff.
Okay.
But you can only roll them like in pairs of like matching and stuff. And you have to, at the end of the minute, you have to assign the dice to the cards.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do badly, or if you don't assign enough dice to the different cards, they can attack you and deal damage to you. And I played it for a few rounds, and I was like, my management was not good. It seemed like an interesting little game.
But it also sounds like a lot of micromanagement.
Yeah.
Kind of, because you're also panicking against the timer of the 1 minute kind of thing.
Sure.
I played a game called Inoka. I ended up buying it, but it's basically rock, paper, scissors with cards.
Oh, nice.
And with really neat like squirrel warrior art.
Oh, cool.
Not quite like Redwall or the Squirrel Squire or anything like that, but like squirrels with like spears and shields and stuff, like just fighting each other or whatever.
Cool.
And the game is you have 3 tactics: attack, defend, or taunt. And then like rock, paper, scissors, one beats the other and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And then they all, like the different ones have like hash marks next to them. And so even if you like maybe put up the same card or something,
mm-hmm.
whoever has the higher hash mark on the card.
Oh, so there's always a winner.
There's always a tie. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, sometimes there is ties because sometimes you play
the same card.
The exact same card.
Sure.
It's a fast little 2-player game. Or I guess it's more than 2-player too, because I was reading the rules and there's like a battle melee version or whatever.
Battle Royale.
Yeah, kind of, where you have a bunch of people together. That was a fun little game.
100 people go in, 1 person walks out.
There aren't enough cards in that deck for that. That was a fun
Everybody
little...
gets 1 card.
That was a fun little profile, a small profile game I liked.
Cool.
I played, or I didn't play, but I checked out this other game called Adapt, and you are fighting fish, and then you draw cards to see and basically evolve your fish.
Oh, cool.
There's like a nine slot player mat or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and the goal of the game is to be the last surviving fish. And it's like a combination like dice slash card game.
Okay. Because
you got that, but then you got like dice you got to roll too.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a bunch of expansions for that I ended up getting. The cephalopod expansion, because duh.
Yeah.
Fantasy sea creature expansion.
Well, of course, you got it.
Reptiles and turtles and stuff expansion. Sure. And the biomech expansion, where you could literally have a shark with a laser beam on its head.
Perfect.
But it seemed like a cool little game. I wish the player mats were better. They're just folded up pieces of, like, folded up paper.
Oh, okay.
I'm probably just going to go have them laminated. Like, I'm a sucker for, like, play mats and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and I love it when they bring stuff like that out.
Oh, yeah, you know what? Putting just a little bit of effort into mm-hmm. your stuff
it
goes a long way.
Like, there were a few games I looked at, I'm like, do you have a play mat? And they're like, yeah, or no, and I'm like, hmm. one of the best things I bought, and it's not even really so much a game itself, was the BoardGaming.com people, or BoardGamingTable.com people, mm-hmm. that build those really fancy like game tables and stuff.
Yeah.
They were running like a special. If you signed up for their email newsletter, you could get one of these giant gaming backpacks for like $20.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And this thing is huge. Like, it's super deep.
Okay.
And I got one. I'm like, and I ended up putting some, like when I was leaving, I put some of my luggage in it.
Really?
To like just free up a hand space.
Wow. Impressive.
It's a very impressive bag. It's a very nice bag, actually. I was like, oh, okay.
Awesome.
You could definitely fit some like big games in there.
Not Gloomhaven, though.
The Gloomhaven box would fit in it.
Seriously.
Yeah. That's it might be one bag. Of the only games you put in there, but yeah. you could fit the Gloomhaven.
That's
the Gloomhaven.
A big bag.
There were lots of people playing Gloomhaven.
Gloomhaven is the size of a child's coffin.
It's one way of describing it. Yeah,
that's a dark take on it.
it's an image.
I mean, yeah,
it really paints a picture.
Yeah, but the Gloomhaven doesn't play though. That box is huge. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to that game. It's a meaty. Meaty game.
It's pretty rad. I've only played it once and we didn't finish the scenario that we were doing, but I enjoyed it. It's very cool.
Mm-hmm. I guess according to like the event book and stuff, there was a Twilight Imperium tournament and stuff going on.
Oh wow. That's another big one.
Yeah, I played that game a lot. Yeah.
Not quite child coffin size.
No, the box is huge, but yeah. The gameplay itself takes hours. Like people want to complain about Risk or Monopoly? No.
Well, yes, those are the two games you think of when you think of long games, Risk and Monopoly.
They know that's what they really do.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I'm not like, I mean, I was smiling when I said that, but I wasn't making a joke. Monopoly is a terribly long game.
I think the longest Twilight Imperium game I've ever played was like 12 hours and I wanted to stab myself. And the shortest one I think I've ever played was like 6 hours. I've heard of other people getting it knocked out in 4.
Wow.
That's still 4 hours of one game.
I've only ever finished one game of Monopoly in my entire life.
I mean, me and my sister used to knock them out all the time.
It goes a lot quicker if you play without the buildings.
Mm.
If you just go straight, okay.
Who runs out of money?
Who runs out of money first? You're not buying and trading buildings and like hotels
auctioning.
And stuff. Yeah, auctioning. You don't really do that. Yeah, you can knock out a game of Monopoly in an hour and a half if you really put your mind to it.
I don't know. I feel if you don't have the buildings, though, you can't drain the cash
fast enough.
Fast.
At that point, you're just going around the circle, table over and over. I mean, it does go a little smoother.
Though, if you have more players, you're less likely to put buildings out because you're less likely to own multiples of the same color or whatever.
Right.
Let's see here. I saw, and I kind of kicking myself for not getting it. But they had the Nicktoons, like Nickelodeon battle miniature board game or whatever.
Huh.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, I remember when the Kickstarter came out and I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. But like, yeah, you build the board and stuff and everyone picks a character they want to play as or whatever. Like, seriously, it's like it's like everybody.
Yeah, Rocco.
Yeah, Rocco, SpongeBob, like all kinds of characters. And then they had the Reptar expansion, which had a giant Reptar figurine in it.
Excellent.
And that sold out, but the base game didn't.
Oh,
so I'm like, I wonder if that's just a bunch of Kickstarter people who didn't go in for the Reptar one.
Yeah,
yeah.
Trying to think, I bought a handful of artwork from some artists that I like. I bought some artwork for the Anoka card game.
Oh, sure.
The artist herself was there. I didn't get them signed, but kind of wish I would have. I bought some really cool Zelda art.
Oh, cool.
From these guys down in Tennessee. I see them every year anyway. They come to the Renaissance Festival every year. Mm. They have like a permanent booth.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
The Eridani Studios, Mike and Paul. But
I've been to the Ren Fair and I
like if you come around
remember that.
If you come around to the right side of the fair, there's kind of like that artist alley kind of area, kind of near the pirate ship and stuff. They're there. But they're brothers and they have both really distinct art styles. Like Mike does a lot of like horror themed art. He does like a lot of like things like that. And then Paul does a lot of video game art or themed art. And he there for a while. He was I'm not sure if he still has the license or not, but he was an official Wheel of Time artist for the book series.
Oh wow!
And so like he was able to do all this like really cool Wheel of Time art and sell. He was really excited about that because he loves that book series.
Man, I wish they would have built the streets in at the Ren Faire facing the other direction, because the way it is now, you get fully blasted with the sun.
Oh, yeah.
I know we're not talking about the Ren Faire right now, but last time I went, it was just like you're walking directly into the sun the whole time.
I mean, yeah, I try to go early in the morning, because if you don't, that exit gets clogged to no end. You want to get there right about when they open. But yeah, I know what you're talking about, because as soon as you're going up that right side of the, actually either side of the fair, you're just getting nailed. And then by noon, that back row is just a sea of people. Yeah, I go to the Ren Faire a lot, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
The jousting is so rad.
Oh,
it's
I know.
So rad.
And it's the fact that it's like, it's not stage jousting either. Yeah, it's real. Full contact, getting knocked on your butt.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the fact that they now have VIP seating.
Really?
Like before the joust, you can spend a little extra money and you get the VIP covered seating, so you're not sitting in the bleachers in the sun, and they give you like a drink and you get like a little colored pennant to like wave around. And
you get the Medieval Times experience.
You kind of do.
Except for that it's real.
And there's no food.
Awesome. Yeah.
And then at the end, the knights will come into the VIP stands and sit and talk with you and you ask them questions and stuff. It's really cool. Anyway, Origins.
If you pay a little more, the knights will give you a kiss.
Their lords sitting in the corner counting coins, wearing a fuzzy hat with a cane. I hear you're looking for a knight time.
A knight to remember.
Yep.
So that was a thing. Beyond that, Origins was a blast. I don't know if I want to volunteer next year or if I just want to go and just be a regular con goer again.
That was my feel after I did GDEX, because I didn't really get to do anything.
Yeah, you work work what you're supposed to do. You'll get out a little bit, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great time. There was so much I wanted. I didn't even play Werewolf this year.
Really? And normally, no, you always play Werewolf.
I know. I generally always get at least a game of Werewolf in, and I didn't this year. I almost bought a werewolf ribbon, too, so I wouldn't have to pay the tokens every time I went.
Mm.
But I didn't, and that's on me. It was just a blast, and just seeing so many people. They had a lot of authors and stuff there, too, like doing book signings and whatnot.
Sure.
The one I remember mostly was Mercedes Lackey. She writes a bunch of fantasy books.
That name sounds kind of familiar.
Yeah, I personally didn't know about...
Because it's a car.
Well.
What?
It's because that's a car. That's why it sounds familiar. Oh.
Mercedes. Yes, that's it.
And we're right lacking them?
We are all lacking in Mercedes.
Yes.
I will agree.
Yeah.
But yeah, they had like a author meet and greet area off to the side that was kind of neat.
Cool.
That's cool for a
It's getting bigger. And there was actually a handful of cosplayers this year too. Normally I don't really see many.
Yeah.
But I did, I mean, I still wasn't a lot because it's not really that kind of convention, right. But there were some. Like, I saw at least one furry.
There's always at least one.
Yeah. And a Harley Quinn.
Again, there always is at least one.
A couple Narutos.
There was no Deadpool, was there?
Those Narutos, that's just how they dress.
Yeah.
I don't know if I saw a Deadpool or not.
See, I would only allow a Deadpool into Origins if he had the Beyblade card thing.
The Yu-Gi-Oh disc thing?
Yeah.
That'd be hilarious.
That weird, dumb arm blade.
it's time to die. Anyway. Man. Magic the Gathering was flying the whole time.
I'm sure it was.
Popping off.
Yeah.
It was popping off.
Wizards of the Coast stuff, probably. Did they have a booth?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Wizards of the Coast is Magic, and D&D. True. Like, there was a lot of that going on.
Mm. Was Kate Welch of the C team and also works for Dungeons and Dragons there?
I don't know.
She's cool. I like her.
I didn't go upstairs to the Wizards of the Coast Dungeons and Dragons area this year. Mm. I should have. Generally, they have something. My mind was such a rush this year. I felt like I didn't really do a whole lot.
Yeah.
Other than work the demo.
Yeah, it's one of those times where you did everything but didn't feel like you did everything. Like,
yeah, kinda.
You were busy but not in the way you really would have preferred.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not bad. I mean, you know, get to go to the convention for free and everything, and granted, to be fair, a full Origins pass for like the whole week is $60.
It's not bad.
That's not bad at all.
It's not bad.
Especially if it's three rooms.
Yeah, that's a day pass at Wizard World.
Yeah. Yeah.
It might be more now. I don't even know.
Who knows?
Depends on if they got Jason Momoa that year or not.
Yeah. But yeah, that's pretty much my experience there.
Well, awesome. I'm glad it was a good time. I'm glad it was a good experience for you, man.
Yeah, and I can't wait for my Cogs and Commissars to come.
Oh, there we go.
So we can play that.
That's going to be...
That was probably one of my more positive experiences. Like, I saw the game there, and I didn't buy it when I was there. I was like, oh, that looks cool. And then when I went back on Sunday, I'm like, well, I kind of want that game. So I went in to go buy it, and they were completely sold out of the deluxe edition that I wanted. And I was like, well, that stinks. But then I was talking to a guy, and it turned out he was the president of the company. He like hands me his card and goes, hey, look, I know we got some in the warehouse. You know, shoot me an email later and we'll get you one. I'm like, cool. And he was very fast and very, like, I got home. I emailed him yesterday and it was like, boom, here's the PayPal request. We'll have it to you out and it'll be here Thursday.
Wow. That's impressive.
I know. Yeah. I'm like, that is some top notch customer
now
service.
That is service.
I'll buy that for a dollar.
All right, well, hey, let's go ahead and take a break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about some news. Hey, we're back. That was Walk of the Dinosaur by Was Not Was.
Appropriate band name. I mean...
Now, what if they're still around, and they've got, like, three sequels to Walk the Dinosaur, and they just never catch on?
Walk the Mammoth, and then walk the Prehistoric Ape?
Run the Dinosaur.
Yeah, Jog the Dinosaur.
Speedwalk the Dinosaur.
Saunter the Dinosaur.
Run the Dinosaur featuring Run the Jewels.
And Run DMC.
And Run DMC.
Run this way. Yeah, that was bad.
All right.
Anyway, let's talk about some news. Not make horrible jokes.
Yeah. So
that's what we're good at, though.
That's true.
What do we want to start with? Well, you know, dinosaurs are kind of monsters, kind of.
I mean,
this is a stretch.
And Monster Hunter does feature a lot of dinosaur-like monsters.
That's very true.
So Monster Hunter.
Yeah. So Monster Hunter, for folks who don't know, is a game put out by Capcom. It's a pretty big franchise. At least it started over in Japan, was really big, and then it kind of crossed over, and it's gotten really big here. The latest one, Monster Hunter Worlds, is getting their first bit major DLC.
Yep. And the beta for that is starting on PlayStation 4 very soon.
Right.
And it was a huge success.
And it's a huge success.
It was the first time it really got a foothold in America.
Yeah. So, you play a general, like a generic NPC.
And an RPG character you build.
Yep. That you go and fight monsters in order to get their bits to build better armor to fight more dinosaurs. And monsters.
It's a vicious cycle.
It really is.
You're a big game hunter in a monster world.
Yeah, so that's the loop, the gameplay loop. The gameplay loop is the game in this sense.
And there is next to no plot, so what's the natural next progression of this? You make a movie out of it.
With Paul W.S. Anderson.
With, of course, legendary hack Paul W.S. Anderson. And who do you get to star in your Paul W.S. Anderson movie? That's right, his wife. Mila Jovovich.
You know, it'd be nice to see her in other movies that are good.
It would be nice.
I mean, she's in The Fifth Element.
That was so long ago.
I know, I love that movie.
I mean, it's probably one of my favorite movies, but it has been a long time.
It's the best movie she's in.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
So,
unlike those, like, what, 800 Resident Evil films?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there was a trailer that leaked for this Monster Hunter movie.
From Japan,
and...
It's a teaser trailer, too. Yeah, it's not very long.
Yeah, but it had enough. It had Tony Jaa as the hunter.
The monster hunter.
He is the monster hunter.
You didn't know it, but the game's been named after him the whole time.
It's, yeah.
Was he the one with the big jawbone sword?
He was.
Okay.
Yep. So, yeah, this game series has no plot, so I don't know what exactly they're going to be doing with this movie to give it some kind of plot.
But you act again, like the Resident Evil films had plots.
But then again, I was just going to say Anderson did make about a bajillion Resident Evil movies out of
that didn't
that game
even follow
series.
The game's plot.
Not even a little bit.
Yeah.
Like the first one was kind of there, and then they just go further and further away.
And the thing is, Resident Evil does have a plot.
Yeah.
Like there's a story.
But hey, you know what? In that case, this might be a boon because now the director doesn't have to, and the writers don't have to try to make a movie fit into
plot. You can't be disappointed on that front.
Yeah, exactly. And like Mila Jovovich is there, and she's always good.
Though she looks pretty much the same she has in every other film she's done in the last years.
She's not one of the monster hunters.
No, she is generic American
soldier?
Gun soldier.
Because they're taking the same direction as the much loved Sonic the Hedgehog film.
And the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Yeah.
Where you take real life, real world people and put them into Monster Place.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, for the Mario movie, that kind of was the plot of the original Mario.
A little bit.
At the time. They've retconned the whole From Brooklyn thing.
Yeah.
But at the time that movie came out,
It
was accurate up to the point where they went into the pipe.
Yeah. You know, I would, much like my strange movie life hack with the Lost in Space movie, I have a similar one for the Super Mario Brothers movie. They're not basing the movie off of the game. They're basing it off of the Captain Lou Albano Super Mario Brothers Super Show.
Swing your arms from side
to
side.
That's true, because that Mario and Luigi has no Mushroom Kingdom connection whatsoever.
Zero. They live in the Bronx, and they have a lot of run-ins with pseudo-celebrities.
Yeah.
Don't they actually go into the pipe, though?
The cartoon.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
No, when it's live-action sequences with Captain Lou Albano and Danny Wells, I know who they are. I know their names.
Yes.
They don't...
Oh, man, do you remember when they had, like, legit Inspector Gadget on there? Looking for repairs?
Mm-hmm.
That was, like, one of the best celebrity cameos.
It was pretty great.
I always assumed it either took place before or after.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
Mario Brothers.
Like, it just feels like he's just telling the stories of his adventures or whatever.
Did you ever watch that clip where Mario said the F word?
Yes. Yes, I've seen that.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Oh, yeah. No, Captain Lou was a wrestling promoter prior to being on the show. And they were ad-libbing something, and Luigi says something, and he quotes back, "Well,
yeah,
you, Luigi."
And they didn't catch it.
They didn't catch it because he said it real quick.
Oh.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this Monster Hunter movie.
Monster Hunter movie. It's probably not going to be good.
I mean,
it might be fun.
It looks visually interesting.
It could potentially be one of those bad good movies.
Yeah. I mean, one of the characters looks like the female lead they keep tying into the Monster Hunter World games with the goggles and the hair and the...
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks visually right.
Yeah.
It's a shame that they decided that it needs this like real world tie-in plot.
Yeah. But that could lead to super hokey as hell scenes, and I'm here for that.
I just hope it doesn't affect the future games. Like, I don't want to fight monsters in real world
in New York City.
We won't see that, because how much effect did the movies have on the Resident Evil game series?
I mean, you're not wrong, but I also think Capcom was smart. Well, it is also Capcom.
This is also Capcom.
Okay, so yeah, I think we're good then.
Yeah, I think we're
never
good.
Never mind.
Capcom
worry averted.
Capcom knows how to milk money out of bad movies. They've done it since Street Fighter, so this is common ground. For every time Street Fighter plays on TV, they make like $1 million or something.
Hey, when we saw the Street Fighter movie, that was the most important day of our lives, but to Capcom it was Friday.
Oh, that's good.
I made the joke.
You got it. Someone was going to. All right, so hey, while we're talking about movies with like surprising like
twists?
Plot elements and twists or splits, perhaps?
Splits.
Oh.
You guys remember the banana splits? No?
I mean, that makes sense. Okay,
yeah, okay,
sure.
Yeah, because not a lot of people do.
Yeah.
It was an old kids show, live action kids show from the 70s?
I think mid-70s, I think. Early to mid-70s.
Okay, yeah. So kind of like, oh, man.
H.R. Puff and Stuff.
Yeah, H.R. Puff and Stuff. That was the one I was trying to think of. Yeah,
it's the Hanna-Barbera version of H.R. Puff and Stuff, which means it's H.R. Puff and Stuff, but incredibly cheap.
Yes, exactly. So why are we talking about banana splits?
Because they're making a movie, and it's not going to go the way you think it is, because it's a sci-fi straight-to-video horror film.
Yeah. This is kind of wild because
it's a legit franchise with a legit like licensing thing.
Yeah. Like in any other universe, this would be like someone going, oh, we took inspiration from shows like H.R. Puff and stuff.
Yeah.
And the Banana Splits and came up with our own thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like with evil Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, in any other universe, it would be called like the Strawberry Blizzard.
Yeah.
Gang.
That's it.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah, it would be close, but not quite. But for some reason, this happened. Like, the rights holders to Banana Splits were like, sure,
yeah,
make them all murderers.
Yeah, make them all killer robots.
Yeah, guess what? It's basically Five Nights at Freddy's the movie.
Yeah,
kind of. It's like
with actual characters.
Yeah, it looks like they're having like their last television performance or something, and they start kidnapping kids out of the audience and murdering people.
Yeah.
To keep the show going forever or something.
Yeah. And like they get tore up and stuff and you can see their robot bits underneath, just like the Five Nights and Freddy's games.
Yeah.
It's very much a knockoff on that. But you know what? They've taken forever with that movie. So
they might as well.
Yeah.
But this is wild. Just the fact that they're using the license.
Yeah. I mean, it's right up there if they would have got like, I don't know, like the Chuck E. Cheese franchise or the McDonald's gang.
Or, like, did a It knockoff, but it was called Bozo.
I mean, that I already had a fear like that. Thanks for reinforcing that one.
I always liked Bozo when I was a kid. I don't know. I like that game where they throw the ping pong ball.
I was just going to say the ping pong toss
game. The grand prize game, uh-huh. I think is what it was called.
Yeah.
That was some thrilling television.
Mm-hmm. Edge of your seat stuff, I tell you.
The homie don't play that horror movie. Yeah.
Homie the clown.
Homie the killer clown.
That was in Living Color, right?
That was. Oh, yes.
Jim Carrey's launching point.
Yeah.
Back when he was James Carrey.
Really?
Yeah, if you look at the credits, it says James Carrey.
James Carrey, yep.
Oh, fun fact, I learned about this on Twitter today. Richard Donner directed some of the Banana Splits episodes.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Huh. Or at least someone named Richard Donner. I'm assuming it's the Superman guy.
You know, there is an easy way to look this up, but I refuse.
Yeah,
I
think just going to continue to believe it's the Superman guy.
Live in this truth. Yeah, that's what we're going to do.
So anyway, yes, Banana Splits horror movie, straight to DVD. Blu-ray.
Sure.
Anytime I saw the Banana Splits on TV as a kid, and I'm talking like, you know, 12, whenever it was on Cartoon Network or whatever, I'd be like, you'd have to be high to enjoy this, was my reaction to it.
They're all like that.
Yeah.
H.R. Puff and stuff, Puff the Magic Dragon.
H.R. Puff and stuff, I'm pretty sure they were high. I mean, it was English.
Lidsville?
I don't remember that one.
Oh, that's another Sid and Marty Krofft live action show where they're all hats. Everybody has hats.
Oh.
Or not has hats. Everyone is hats.
Oh. Huh.
Sid and Marty Krofft always struck me as like the nasty Muppets.
Kinda.
Like not nasty like adult, but nasty like cheaper.
Yeah.
Like the Big Lots Muppets.
The GoBots of Muppets.
Yeah.
Yes, the GoBots of Muppets. I like that.
So that's a thing that kind of came out of like left field.
Speaking of other movies that came out of left field and things that we didn't know we really needed, apparently there's a sequel to The Shining? Kinda?
I mean,
it's been a book for a while.
Yeah, it's been a book, but they're making a movie of it.
I mean, it's Stephen King. They mine his books for movies for like, and they will for like forever.
Yeah.
Sure.
Eventually, all his books will eventually be movies.
Yes. And he never stops writing. He's always writing.
Just constantly.
Him and his son.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, Dr. Sleep is the story of grown-up Danny Torrance from The Shining, who uses his psychic powers to solve crimes, and he meets another psychic girl.
He uses his psychic powers to help people
die. Something like that, yeah.
He's kind of got a Kevorkian thing going on.
Right. And
I never read the book, so I'm not really like deep into it.
There's something with like a cult that's kidnapping psychic children, and he has to save the kids with the Shining. The Shinnin.
I was getting ready to say the Shinnin. Like one of the best Treehouse of Horrors.
Yeah, yeah. It really is. But the interesting part of this is the fact that it says it's based off the book, but also takes a lot of imagery from the movie, from the Stanley Kubrick movie. which Stephen King has been historically at odds with.
Yes. I wonder if he, if the production company, I don't know who's making the movie, if they met with King and came up with some kind of compromise saying, listen, we'll put like 85% of your book into this, but we got to tie it into the movie. But
I actually read an article or skimmed an article mm-hmm. that said both the Kubrick estate and the Stephen King and his people are totally cool with this film.
Sure, because it's going to make them a bunch of money.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought afterwards. It's like, well, it's probably for the money.
Yeah.
But they are both like, yeah, this is good.
So, well, here's the thing. When most people think of The Shining...
They think of the movie.
Yeah, they think of that movie. I mean, Stephen King is a very popular horror author and will always be.
Mm-hmm. But Jack's weapon is iconically going to be an axe forever and not the croquet mallet it was in the book.
Right. Yeah, and like the visuals of that film, like the bloody elevator,
they're so
that
strong.
Carpet.
Yes.
Everything, like Kubrick might have been a madman, mm-hmm. but he did make a lasting effect on pop culture as a whole.
The visuals in that movie are so strong, there's no way you could ever overwrite them with anything else.
I mean, heck, I think one of the seasons of American Horror Story takes some visual cues.
I'm sure it does.
Well, in Castle Rock, it's got Jack Torrance's like niece, and she is constantly shown with an like callbacks with an axe and not a croquet mallet.
And, you know, this trailer looks like it's pulling a lot of visual elements, not just scenes directly lifted from the movie The Shining, but, like, static shots and, like, the tone of a lot of the shots. Seem to match pretty...
Music.
Yeah,
the music. Yeah, yeah, that was a good one.
That goes a long
way. I mean,
way.
Come on, when he, like, peers through the hole, the axe-torn hole through the door and everything.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yep.
I mean, I'll be interested to... I'll watch it.
Yeah, I think otherwise this would be a fairly unremarkable Stephen King...
Just put it on the list.
Yeah, but adding in the fact that they're mixing up the two sources in this way kind of makes it a lot more interesting
makes
than
it very
it would be
palatable.
Otherwise.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. I'll go see it.
I mean,
it.
From an art direction, like not even being a fan of the books themselves, just from an art direction standpoint... It's gold. It's magic.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, I mean, it does look like an interesting movie. A lot of the shots are very interesting, you know, like with the whole sliding across the floor and everything. And
Which reminds me of that other Stephen King. That was it 1408?
Oh, I love 1408.
That's a good, that's a good movie.
The movie based off his short story?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Samuel L. Jackson getting in his one F-bomb.
You get one. You get one in a PG-13.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you're gonna have Sam Jackson, he has to be the one that says it.
Oh, of course.
But that's a good movie. That's a really good movie.
It is a really good movie. If you've missed out on that one, it's a good'un.
Yep,
is what they say.
So tell me about the Telltale Minecraft story mode.
So Telltale Games, as we all know, has gone out of business almost a year ago.
About a year ago, yeah.
But their games are still kind of nebulously floating around out there, including Minecraft Story Mode, which is going to be completely removed from any service you bought it on here coming shortly.
End of July is what I heard.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to buy these games or even re-download them if you've already bought them.
It's going the way of PT. They're just going to disappear.
Because of rights issues.
Yeah.
They don't know who really owns it, I guess.
Yeah. So anyway, on was it the Microsoft Store?
Yeah.
Okay, so on the Microsoft Store, they decided, okay, for the people who have previously purchased the game and deleted it, but want to re-download it before it disappears forever, they have to put it back in the store in order for people to re-download it. But they didn't want people to buy it, so they priced each chapter at $100 a pop.
That was their solution. There's no way to list a game on Xbox Store.
Game Store, whatever.
Without having it be available to purchase.
Yeah, so they've put out... So when they listed it, they put in a couple of different places like Facebook and Twitter, hey, this is what we have to do. We urge you to not buy this game because if you do, you will be charged the full amount. And to give you an idea, in order to get the entire game, that is available.
All the episodes.
You know, going from buying them at full price now, what is full price now, you would be paying upwards of $700 for one lackluster story mode game.
Yeah, it's not that. Yeah, that's the thing. It's not even that good.
It's not. It's really not. But it's just insane to me that they would do something like that. And it shows that they are hoping that at least some people, they're hoping to make a little bit of money off of this at last minute. They told people to not buy it. They're expecting some people to buy it. Because if they really wanted people to not buy this game, $100, while it's a lot, is still a feasible amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
They should have priced them at like the absolute maximum that the Xbox Game Store could do it, like just all nines all
or
the way across.
Yeah. Just code in a non-purchase button, just a download button if you already had the...
Yeah, code in some way to hide it from the store.
But that would require Microsoft having to go through and change their coding for their
entire store
where it's easier for them to just slap an arbitrary high price. But again, put it at $999, because if you could put $100, you could put $999, make each chapter $1,000. Then no one will buy it, and you won't have to worry about people getting gypped.
Yeah, this kind of seems like we're trying to secretly make some scarcity dollars.
Trying to make some last-minute bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they're scalping digitally.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is setting a bad precedent, so...
when Telltale went out of business, I knew something like this was going to happen, so I made sure that I own hard copies of both seasons of both Sam and Max.
Mm-hmm.
And the Monkey Island games, in case I ever want, and Strong Bad.
And Strong Bad,
in case I ever wanted to play them again. So now I have those, because I knew crap was going to hit the fan.
This was going to happen.
Which reminds me, I need to get a hard copy of the last season of the Devil's Playhouse, Sam and Max.
Yeah. Well, you can find it in places.
That's true.
On internet. There, it's available.
And it's on Steam still.
Really?
I think, as long as you... I don't know if you can buy it, but I think you can still download it.
Okay.
Steam is actually good about that. There's games I have that don't exist anymore. That Lego Universe, mm-hmm. that old Lego MMO that didn't last very long, I could still download that on Steam if I wanted.
Really?
You can still buy that on Switch. I see it at the store all the time.
No, the Lego Universe.
Lego Universe, not Lego Worlds. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. I could still download that if I wanted to. It doesn't work, but... You know, I own the right to get it if I want it.
I tell you, Steam really has the best digital game marketplace.
They've been doing it the longest.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a shame that their developer... Yeah, I shouldn't talk about this.
Yeah. But, I mean, their marketplace is way better than the Epic Store. Have you heard about the Epic Store stuff?
Oh, that trash? Yeah.
How one, their store is bad, and two, they keep snatching up, like, exclusivity rights with a bunch of games because they have infinite... They have infinite Fortnite money, and they're planning for the eventuality that they will no longer have infinite Fortnite money, so they want to get as many exclusive games as they possibly can.
It's like they're holding them hostage, and they're basically holding Steam in a Mexican standoff to go, hey, I mean, this part's kind of cool, but, like, you know, kind of change some of your policies.
And here's the thing. They're throwing so much money at, like, small developers. I heard a story about this. There are some, like, indie developers, like the people who did Hades, the new one that just came out a little bit ago.
It's the Bastion people, I believe.
They said that they were offered so much money from the Epic Store to be exclusive that they could not sell a single game ever and still come out in the black.
That's dumb.
That's wild. And, this is even better. This isn't on the board, but I heard this about this too. They approached the guys who did Samurai Showdown, the new Samurai Showdown that's coming out soon. And to the guy's credit, he said, no, we will not be exclusive on your platform. That is crazy. And before you go, yeah, great, integrity. The reasoning is, he said, why would we give up millions of downloads elsewhere? There is never going to be a world in which the fighting game Samurai Showdown is going to sell millions of copies.
It's true.
That's never going to happen.
It's true.
Don't get me wrong. I like the Samurai Showdown series. I do.
Oh, and this new game looks dope as hell.
Oh, I know.
But, like, there's absolutely no way on earth Street Fighter doesn't sell millions of copies.
Yeah, and that's the big, other than Mortal Kombat, that's the big fighting game.
That's the big one, and it doesn't do hardly anything.
Fighting games are very niche.
Listen, I applaud the guy's integrity, but I believe his his faith.
His accountant was going, no.
his faith in his game may be misplaced a tiny bit.
I mean, I get the point of, you know, not wanting to alienate your customers or whatever, but at the same time, it's kind of like,
not going Epic Store at this point might get you enough good faith points with the community.
Oh, sure, yeah. Yeah, there's people that have said, oh yeah, I'll buy this game twice. I'll buy it wherever it shows up now because I support them.
I mean, here's the funny thing is, like, I don't think a lot of people remember that, like, Epic Games used to be, you know, the Gears of War people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's the other thing with it.
The Jazz Jackrabbit people.
Well, the last thing about this Epic Store thing, and this kind of ties in with Kickstarter as well, and it kind of shows you the problems with Kickstarter.
Well, yeah.
Shenmue 3.
Oh,
was a Kickstarter game.
Yeah, that's right.
When it was in its Kickstarter phase, it promised backers on
multiple formats.
PS4, on Xbox,
Steam.
On Steam.
They specifically said Steam.
And then they turned and got all this gobs and gobs and piles of money, more money than they could ever need to develop this game.
Especially when it still looks like a Dreamcast game.
I read somewhere, though, that is purposeful.
Oh.
Oh,
well, I can get behind that.
Okay, well, that's fine. But
if it's an artistic decision, then okay.
Anyway, they took all this money from fans, people who legitimately wanted this game made, and then signed an exclusivity deal with Epic Games to the point where, again, they could refund everybody from the Kickstarter in full if they wanted to, and still have more than enough to develop the game and sit on a mountain of cash. And here's the thing, because their Kickstarter said Steam, people are talking about a class action lawsuit against the developers of Shenmue 3 for false advertising, because
I think they got ground
and
on
they
that
have
one.
A case. Yeah, they absolutely have a case.
It is a precedent.
Yes.
I've got a game coming out on Steam in October, but if you, but Epic, if you want to change that, hit me up.
Hey, Cliffy B.
Yeah.
Not Cliffy B.
At CT Pinnick on Twitter. Yeah, hit me up.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, it's kind of nuts how, and this isn't really related, it's more just kind of Epic in general,
mm-hmm.
how one game, which was a non-original idea, stolen code, or not so much stolen code, but stolen
concept,
turned Epic from just being kind of a run-of-the-mill general game developer.
They were a pretty big deal because of the Unreal Engine.
Yeah,
they were. Yes, they are.
They weren't hurting.
That's for sure. And that's I think it got them their foot in the door to be able to create this monstrous, almost gaming monopoly they've created.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading an article the other day. They were talking about just like how the Battle Royale format, maybe like it might be burning out soon, which is fine. Because Fortnite has lost a lot of viewership on Twitch, you know, all kinds of there's all these numbers that support this theory.
Yeah, I believe it.
We've seen it so many times with MMOs, MOBAs. What was the other big hot thing they had there?
Survival games.
Survival games were a big burn.
Which is kind of, in a way, Fortnite's kind of an evolution of that concept.
Yes. But it's like, and you're right, they are banking on the fact that they're not going to have that amazing Fortnite money anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But also the fact that a game that has been early access forever, and the fact that Fortnite's not even its original form anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could still play the save the world mode, but no one plays that. No one does.
Yeah.
It's all about the Battle Royale thing, and that's where you get all this money from.
And they kind of did, and they definitely did PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds dirty when they...
They did. They really did.
Yeah. So we can all agree that Epic is...
shady.
Yeah.
Pretty shady. Hate to cut everybody off here.
Well, yes.
But we have hit time. We're actually over time a little bit.
Yeah.
So we got to wrap things up.
We didn't get to talk about Pokemon controversy.
Going to have to save it for next week because I'm sure I'm just going to percolate and get hotter and angrier about it in the week between now and the next time we record. I'm going to percolate on it. Yes. So anyway, you've been listening to Nerd Overload. Thank you very much for tuning in. You can find us each and every day over at nerdoverload.com.
Do you have social media? Because we know you do. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, and Instagram at Nerd Overload Now.
You can send us an email, staff@nerdoverload.com. Tell us your Pokemon opinion.
Sure, let's hear them.
Yeah, tell us what you think about the national Dex being gone, and maybe we'll read it in the show.
Yeah, excellent.
YouTube, you can subscribe to our YouTube channel, Nerd Overload TV.
That's right, you can also find the show on various podcast aggregators online, such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/nerdoverload now, if you want to help support the show and get the show a few days early. Can head on over there and check that out.
We would greatly appreciate it.
Really would. I'd like to thank David Pencil for the use of our intro and outro. You can find more of his music at davidpencil.com. And I think that pretty much is it. So again, thank you all for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Peace out.